facts, candid conversations, and some levity to lighten your day. This is The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
Hey, welcome to the program. Glad you're with me today. We have some amazing stuff to talk about. 1-888-914-9149. It's the number to call, 1-888-914-9149. You can also tweet at me, at Cale Clark is my handle on Twitter, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E. We also have the show account as well, at Cale Clark Show. And you can email us, cale@relevantradio.com. Well, of course, today is February the 11th, and it is the feast day of Our Lady of Lourdes. We have Lourdes of good stuff to talk about. And we really want to talk about on this day the power of miracles. And that's really one of the greatest evidences for the truth of the Catholic Church, her miracles. And that's very fitting because Jesus, who of course founded the church, offered exactly the same credentials for his own life and work. He said this, and this is in John's Gospel. In John chapter 14, verse 11, Jesus said, "Believe me when I say that I am in the Father and the Father is in me, or at least believe on the evidence of the miracles themselves." End of quote. Now, it's one thing to say something. It's another thing to prove it. So the fact that he's doing all these stupendous miracles means maybe we should trust what Jesus is actually saying. When you look at the sheer concentration of the miraculous in the life of Jesus, that, you know, you take it all together, it's a huge sign of the truth of his message, his person, and of course the church that he founded. And in John's Gospel, the miracles of Jesus are never called miracles. They're in fact called signs. And you know, the miracle that Jesus performed, turning water into wine at Cana in Galilee, was the first of his miraculous signs, John tells us. And what do signs do? Well, they point us somewhere. They're indicators of something. And these miracles were signs that God was powerfully moving in and through Jesus. Yes, even as Jesus, because Jesus is God the Son. He is divine, to advance his saving plan for the world. Now, it's interesting, too, that in the very next verse in John's Gospel, in John 14, 12, Jesus says that you are going to do, talking to his followers, you're going to do even greater things than these. Well, how is that possible? How can you do greater miracles than Jesus? Because in the age of the apostles, Jesus was going to continue performing mighty works, but he's going to do it through ordinary humans like them. And that makes it even more stupendous. That's even greater, in a sense. Think about it. When you read the Acts of the Apostles, Peter, his mere shadow, they would lay the sick out in the street, and Peter would walk by, and his mere shadow falling on the sick would heal them. Acts chapter 5, verse 15. Paul, handkerchiefs that had touched Paul, hopefully they were clean, handkerchiefs that had touched Paul or, you know, been brought to him and touched his body, they would then take them to those who were sick and possessed by demons, and they would be cured. The demons would be cast out. Here's what it says in Acts chapter 19, verses 11 and 12. "And God did extraordinary miracles by the hands of Paul, so that handkerchiefs or aprons that were carried away from his body to the sick, diseases left them, and the evil spirits came out of them." Incredible. Now, miracles like this, that helped authenticate the message of the gospel. And these miracles, by the way, of course, are not limited to the apostolic age, and not limited to the time of Christ and the apostles in the first century. Every century in the history of the church has been marked by the miraculous. In the Catholic Church, it can truly be said that miracles never cease. And today, of course, on February the 11th, we're celebrating the feast day of Our Lady of Lourdes. And this is stunning testimony to Catholic truth. St. Bernadette Subaru, who was only, and by the way, she didn't drive a Subaru, that was her last name, S-O-U-B-I-R-O-U-S. Sorry, these tortured dad jokes, I know, but you expect them from me, right? So you're listening to The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. If you want to direct your complaint about the joke somewhere, that's the program you're listening to on Relevant Radio. Well, St. Bernadette Subaru, who lived from 1844 to 1879, she was only 14 years old when she encountered the Blessed Virgin Mary in the Grotto of Lourdes in the south of France. And that happened on this day, February the 11th, in the year 1858. Now, at the time, she had no idea who this lady was. And how often is it that Our Lady appears to innocent children, right? Think about the children of Fatima. Think about Saint Bernadette Subaru. Now, Bernadette, just to tell you a little bit about her, she was a poor peasant girl. She really didn't have formal religious education at all. So Mary would appear to her, and on March the 25th of that year, 1858, the lady, quote-unquote, as Bernadette called her, said this to her in the local dialect, and I'm going to try to say it. Hopefully, I'll pronounce it right. I already messed it up, so let's start again. Take two. So Our Lady said to Bernadette on March 25th, 1858, Que soy era immaculata conceptu. I think I got it that time. And that means, of course, I am the Immaculate Conception. So she told this to her parish priest, to her pastor. You know, who does this lady think she, like, okay, you say you're seeing this lady. I'm not sure I buy this. You're just a kid. You might be making this up. What's her name? Well, she said, I am the Immaculate Conception. And when Bernadette said this to her parish priest, he could hardly believe it. Now think about this. 4 years earlier, only 4 years earlier, the doctrine, the dogma of Mary's Immaculate Conception had been infallibly proclaimed by the Vatican. Now, Bernadette would have had no way on earth of knowing that. Remember, now forget about understanding what it meant. She wouldn't have even known about this yet. Why? This wasn't the age of Google. This wasn't the age of the internet, the information superhighway. News just simply didn't travel fast. So even when the Vatican makes a major proclamation, defines dogma like the Immaculate Conception in 1854, it's going to take a long time before that filters down to the religious education of a 14-year-old peasant girl somewhere in France. So the pastor knew about this. So he was absolutely shocked when she said this to him. So that's when he started thinking, maybe she's telling the truth. And another impressive confirmation, of course, and this is the one that most people know about, of God's action at Lourdes, was the miraculous stream of water that was unearthed by Bernadette at Mary's behest. You know, dig here and you're going to find the stream bubbling up. And of course, these waters have been the source of innumerable healings over the years, a lot of them completely inexplicable by modern science, by any natural means. I've lost track of the exact number of miraculous cures, unexplainable by science, unexplainable by modern medicine, that have been that have occurred at Lourdes. And Bernadette, she was this 14-year-old girl. She was so unlike some of these modern so-called visionaries, quote unquote, and spirituality gurus. And you see this whenever it's the genuine article, whenever somebody is an actual recipient of a real apparition, this always happens. They shun publicity. They do not want to be in the public eye. They don't want any attention for it whatsoever. And this is exactly what happened with Bernadette. Bernadette refused to profit in any way from her experiences. If she were living today, she never would have given an interview. She wouldn't have been on CNN. She wouldn't have gone on Oprah Winfrey's network, OWN. Forget it. She wouldn't have done it. In fact, her fame that accrued to her because of being the recipient of these apparitions of Our Lady, that was actually a big cross in her life. And later on, she, of course, became a nun. She became a Sister of Charity. And when she was in the convent at Nevers, she was often the target of bitter jealousy on the part of the other nuns that lived with her. They were jealous that she was the one that Our Lady chose to appear to. And she died when she was only 35 years old. But God saved, actually, one of his greatest graces for Bernadette. He saved it for after her death. Her body, of course, was found to be incorrupt. And many saints throughout history have been found to be incorrupt. And she is probably the most beautiful of all of the incorrupts in the church history. If you go to my Twitter account, if you follow me at Cale Clark, you'll see that I posted a picture of her face, of the incorrupt body of St. Bernadette Subaru. She's absolutely beautiful. And in fact, I mentioned this before. I have a good friend named Brad, and he's a Protestant minister. And when I was coming back into the Catholic Church in 2004, and he and I had served together on staff in a Protestant congregation, and I for months, I was trying to tell him about why I was coming back into the Catholic Church. was trying to explain to him the doctrine, the history, the biblical arguments for Catholicism, and nothing moved this guy. Absolutely nothing could get through to this guy. Well, my wife and I, when we got married, we went to Europe for our honeymoon. When we came back, we got together with Brad and his wife, and I couldn't contain myself. I started showing a slideshow to him on my laptop, pictures from our honeymoon, our travels, and, you know, I'd forgotten that family photos usually only interest one's family, if that, you know. And I was showing him all these pictures, and I was kind of hoping that our visit to the Vatican, some of the churches of the Eternal City, some of the historic things we'd seen, I thought, oh, they might be curious about these things, and it might attract them to the beauty of the faith. Because we did see a lot of amazing stuff, a lot of great artwork, a lot of incredible stuff at the Vatican museums, and our faith really is a beautiful faith. And anyways, nothing I showed them in the slideshow would get through to Brad at all. And predictably, Brad and his wife were just bored to tears. And the only thing that ever got his attention with respect to the Catholic faith, really, was when I was talking to him about incorrupt saints. And I showed him some images of incorrupt saints. And he kind of freaked out. He was incredulous. And my carefully constructed theological arguments never piqued his curiosity. But that did. He was like, whoa, what is that? That's St. Bernadette Subaru. She died in the 1800s. What? And her body didn't decompose? What in the world? That really got his attention. And so here's a question for someone like Brad and others like him. Why does the Catholic Church alone have this continuous presence of miracles in her midst? Now, I'm not denying that God can do miracles outside the Catholic Church. There's no question that he probably has. You have to look at those claims on their own merits, as individual claims. But you have to admit, the sheer preponderance of the miraculous in the history of the Catholic Church to this day is outstanding, and it's continuous. And even now, of course, to be a canonized saint, you have to have two verified miracles through your intercession that have been wrought. You know, one to be beatified and another one to be canonized. And so saints are being canonized all the time. These miracles are happening constantly. And think about Lourdes. Miracles happen in the modern world as well. I find, though, that there is a great concentration of the miraculous in the Catholic tradition. And you just don't see this anywhere else. The incorrupt bodies of saints like Bernadette, even though she no longer speaks in audible words, that gives eloquent testimony the incorruptibility of the Catholic Church herself. How about that? So that's a little reflection for you on this feast day of Our Lady of Lourdes. Obviously, she appeared to St. Bernadette Subaru, this young 14-year-old girl at the time. You're listening to The K.O. Clark Show. 1-888-914-9149 is the number to call if you have a question about this, if you have a comment about this. The phone lines are open. And you can call. Maybe if you've gone to Lourdes. I've never been there myself, but I really want to go. I really, really want to go. And apparently they do dunk you in the waters. And you have to go in there naked. And I'm telling you, I would do it. I would absolutely plunge in. I'd go under the water. I'd do it. I'd absolutely do it. And I look forward to going there one day. That's one place I've never been. And I do want to go. So if you have a question about that, if you have an experience at Lourdes yourself, maybe you've been healed at Lourdes. 1-888-914-9149, or maybe you know somebody who has. You have a question about miracles, give me a call, let me know. You know, when it comes to apparitions of Our Lady, or just apparitions in general, we do have to make this known, that when Our Lady appeared to St. Bernadette, this was what's known as a private revelation, this apparition. And this is not, it's been approved by the Church, obviously, but you don't have to believe in this to be a Catholic. This is something that you need to know. You only have to believe in what's called public revelation, okay? And I'll explain the difference about that between those two as we go along. I read an article by Kevin Orland Johnson, Dr. Kevin Orland Johnson, writing for Catholic Answers. He talked about the 10 most common misconceptions about apparitions, because apparitions have happened throughout church history. And there are many, you know, alleged apparitions today. Some of them are, quite frankly, probably bogus. But how do you know what the deal is about apparitions? What are the most common misconceptions that people have about them? And I thought I'd share this list with you that Kevin Johnson came up with. The top 10 common misconceptions about apparitions. And it seems like every day or every other day you can read about in the media an alleged apparition, an angel who maybe appeared by a hospital bed, or the face of Christ appearing on a piece of toast or a tortilla. I mean, from the sublime to the ridiculous. And quite frankly, as he says, a lot of Catholics find these types of alleged apparitions embarrassing. But then, of course, there are the major league apparitions, right? Lourdes, Fatima. What's the deal when it comes to these reported apparitions? How can you know where the truth lies? Well, here are the top 10 misconceptions about apparitions. Number one, this is a huge misconception. Anybody who would believe that an apparition can occur in the modern world is crazy. And maybe you've heard that. And if you're going to think that people who believe this stuff are crazy, you're going to have to throw throw the baby out with the bathwater here, because if you claim to believe in the scriptures, this is all throughout the scriptures, right back to the very beginning. Look at the book of Exodus. God appeared to Moses, if you will, through this apparition of the burning bush. And the angel of the Lord spoke to him through this burning bush. It's all throughout the Old Testament and the New. Think about the Annunciation, when the archangel Gabriel appeared to Zechariah in the temple, and then, of course, to Our Lady. The Nativity, of course, angels appeared at the birth of Christ. The Resurrection. I mean, there's so many times that apparitions happened. The Apocalypse, the Revelation to St. John. We did this, of course. We're currently working through the book of Genesis on the Faith Explained show, which airs at 12:30 Central on Relevant Radio, right after Mass. We call it Class After Mass. We're looking at the book of Genesis now. It's a great time to join us. But we looked at Revelation before, and really, John experienced a lot of heavenly visions that were private revelations, if you will. Of course, they became public revelation because it was for the whole church, and John, of course, wrote this down, and Jesus commanded him to. It became the book of Revelation. So there are apparitions one after the other all throughout Scripture. And if it's crazy to believe in this thing, then every Jew and every Christian who ever lived would have to be considered crazy, because apparitions do happen. There are some that are not real, and there are some that are perhaps from the evil one, but they do happen. And real, honest-to-God apparitions sent from God do happen. The second misconception that Kevin Orland Johnson talks about that people have is that real apparitions come only to exceptionally holy people. That only really, really holy saints who are very close to God could ever hope to receive an apparition. Well, that's not actually the case. Saint Bernadette, now she was a very sweet child before Mary appeared to her, and she became even holier afterwards, but at the time, she was pretty ignorant in terms of her catechesis. She wasn't outstanding in her piety compared to her peers at the time that Mary appeared to her in the 1850s. Marie Lataste is another person who he mentions, who started life, she also lived in the 1800s, started life as a remarkably obnoxious little girl in France, but then Christ started appearing to her almost routinely after her first communion. And her personal vices disappeared after that. They just kind of went away. She grew in virtue. Everyone who was ever around her felt an abiding sense of joy just from being around her. She never tried to impress people with her holiness. It just kind of happened, and that was very natural to her. And she just thought, that's the way this should work, right? And a great point there. I mean, our faith should be very natural in the way that we live it out and explain it to others, and there shouldn't be anything odd or annoying or weird about our behavior. I always think about Ned Flanders on The Simpsons, right? This weird Christian guy that, you know, nobody really wants to talk to. We shouldn't be like that. You know, our faith should be very natural and not any kind of an act. Anyways, God doesn't always pick the obvious contender to accomplish something outstanding in that person's life or at a key moment in salvation history. He often chooses to use people who the world, quote-unquote, wouldn't necessarily pick. You know, think about Mother Teresa. She always referred to herself as a pencil in God's hand, but no one would consider her, you know, necessarily, she was in many ways the most beautiful woman in the world because of her inner beauty. But outwardly speaking, a lot of people would have passed by her on the street and never would have noticed her. Think about Gideon in the Old Testament. In the book of Judges, chapter 6, verse 15, Gideon says, "Pardon me, my Lord, but how can I save Israel? My clan is the weakest in Manasseh, and I am the least in my family." You know, why me? And that's often the case when God chooses somebody that he wants to send a message through. You're listening to The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. We're going to take a quick break right now, but if you want to call in, the number is 1-888-914-9149. It's the Feast of Our Lady of Lourdes. We'll be right back. You can see the stars align, but I know that it's more than time. I believe it goes just happen like that, happen like that, happen like that. Right before I hit the ground, son, how you came along and found me.
Faith, facts, and fun. It's the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
Hey, welcome back to the program. It is the Feast of Our Lady of Lourdes. Won't you call in? 1-888-914-9149. We're actually going to go to the phones right now. We have David on the line who's calling from San Marcos, California. David, welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Hey, thanks. I heard you talking about Lourdes, and I'm just a regular guy from California who found my way over to Lourdes. That's kind of a long story. I'm a non-denominational convert to Catholicism.
Wow.
And I was at Lourdes prior to being Catholic.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to say it's like spiritual immersion. The entirety of the grounds. And I think one thing to bring up that really, really stays with me is the prioritization of the sick and the disabled. I mean, these people bring these beautiful people to the very front, and they process as an entire community, filling an underground amphitheater right at the front row for just rows and rows of sick. It's the most humbling, beautiful act of service, and it's just awe-inspiring, and I would absolutely recommend for anybody to go there, even if you're not Catholic. Now, I want to get back there as a Catholic to be able to participate in Mass and all the beauties therein, but it's just, it's an amazing experience.
That is incredible. I like what you said there, that obviously the sick are prioritized there. And, you know, Pope Francis is always talking about the throwaway culture that we have. We want to get rid of the sick. We want to get rid of the elderly. We want to get rid of the dying out of our sight. And that's not the case at Lourdes. And this is, in fact, probably the right way. Things have been set right side up at Lourdes. This is what we should be doing as a church. And David, let me ask you this. When you went to Lourdes, you said you weren't Catholic yet. Was that any kind of a tipping point on your journey into the church? Like, did that push you forward a little bit, just being there? And
I think consciously, I don't know. I think subconsciously, absolutely. I mean, just being around the experience. I mean, there's intangibles going on all the time, I think, through anybody's journey to the church. But it was just a significant, it's spiritual immersion. I mean, it's just from dawn till dusk, processions, mass, private mass, services, the baths, stations of the cross. I mean, it's there. It's on.
That's incredible. And there are also like a number of, from what I understand from talking to other people who've been there, there's a number of volunteers. They're just dedicated volunteers. And they're sort of the unsung heroes of Lourdes. They do so much to help the sick and help people get into the baths and all that stuff. And that's just amazing. So David, thank you very much for that call. That's really a really cool phone call. And I'm so glad that you shared your story about going to Lourdes and the powerful experience that's there. So appreciate that.
You got it.
Right. All right. Okay. Have a great day, David. That was David calling from San Marcos, California, talking about his experience at Lourdes, and he's a convert to the faith as well. We're going to go back to the phones now. We've got Sebastian on the line. He's also calling from somewhere in California, not sure where. But Sebastian, welcome to the show. And what's on your mind?
Well, funny you should mention the character of, you know, Saint Bernadette when she was a young gal. There was a movie made in the late 80s about, I don't know if it was called The Song of Bernadette. The actress is an American gal. And in the movie, I didn't know exactly what you'd said about her character when she was younger, but she didn't particularly seem very pious, as you say, you know, that I guess with time she kind of developed, I guess, finally when she entered the order. But you touched on something earlier that something that really upsets me. And it's, okay, you were speaking with fundamentalist Christians or whoever it was. Mm-hmm. And I find that there's a great chasm when it comes to the Blessed Virgin Mary. That's one of the things that really sets them off. Why do you worship her? I was trying to have a dialogue with someone on the computer, and he kept telling me I was an idolater. So
right,
I kept
right.
trying to explain to him about the early church, but none of that means anything to them. So you're a bigger man than I am. I'm not an apologist, but the times I've tried, I've not been able to do very well, and one of them is because of the Virgin Mary, saints, and so forth. I think, just lastly, I think their religion, it's whitewashed. Most of the churches you go to, there's nothing on the walls. They're lacking the humanity that comes with prayer and being a Christian. So I don't know. You're a bigger man than I am.
I don't know about that, Sebastian. I don't know about that. Although I am getting pretty big in the wrong kind of ways. I'm growing in the wrong direction here. Wow, I got to really start exercising. But having said that, no, I really appreciate what you said. And I think, obviously, when we're talking to non-Catholic Christians, and I can empathize with you, the conversation starts out with, you're an idolater, if you're a Catholic. It's only going to go downhill from there. It's not usually going to be the best starting point for dialogue necessarily. But yeah, a lot of people, they don't know how to argue without getting into an argument, if you will. And the thing is, and they're coming from a good place. If you think about it, they're concerned with proper worship of God, right? They don't want anybody to break the first commandment and become an idolater. But of course, we don't do that. We know what the commandments are as Catholics. Only God is to be worshipped. We don't worship Mary. And so, for the record, if anybody's listening out there today who may not be Catholic, if you're wondering, no, we do not worship Mary. That would be a serious, serious sin. If we did that, that would be the sin indeed of idolatry. If we were guilty of it, but we're not. So we don't worship Mary, we honor her. And we actually give her a special form of honor. There's actually a special name for it in Latin. Honor, to honor someone in Latin, is the word dulia. And we give Mary something called hyperdulia. Think about a hyperactive kid, right? Hyperdulia. It's extreme honor because of her position as the Mother of God. Because she gave the word flesh. The flesh that Jesus used to redeem the world on the cross came from her body and her body alone, because Jesus didn't have a human father. And so she participated in the redemption of Christ in a way that nobody else did. We give her great honor. Jesus obviously obeyed the Ten Commandments. He honored his father and mother. He honored his foster father, Saint Joseph. He honored his mother, Mary. And we should do the same as a Christian, as an imitator of Christ. We've got to do that. And so that's what it's really all about. And Mary, of course, points us to Christ. She doesn't detract from Christ. She says in John's Gospel, do whatever he tells you. That's what she does, points us to her son. So if you have a proper conception of Mary, you're going to have a proper conception of Christ, because she points us to him and who he really is. We talked about that the other day in reference to Our Lady of Fatima and how she can be a bridge for Muslims to understand Christ better, because they honor her, and she can point them to Christ as well. So it's important to realize that. And so they're coming from a good place, these Protestant folks that you're talking to, but maybe they're not expressing themselves in maybe the most polite way by accusing you of idolatry. It's always better to try to seek to understand where the other person is coming from before you seek to be understood. And very often we're not given the benefit of the doubt, and sometimes we're guilty of that too. We don't let other people explain where they're coming from before we try to drop the hammer on them, so to speak. So it's all about dialogue, respectful dialogue, and we've got to do a much better job with that, to be sure. Now, in terms of that movie that you mentioned, I haven't seen that movie, and I haven't even seen the old black and white movie, The Song of Bernadette. It sounds like that's an update, a modern day update of that film. Karen Moran, though, she might have broken her rule of not watching black and white movies. I think she might have seen that film, and maybe she'll share with us later what that was like. If that's the case, I seem to get an indication that she's seen it. But anyways, I'm not an expert on the early life of Bernadette by any stretch, what her character was like. But I have read a couple things here and there, as you sort of alluded to, that maybe she wasn't necessarily the most pious kid at the time. But obviously, she became very, very pious, became a nun afterwards, and is, in fact, a canonized saint of the Catholic Church. You're listening to The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. It's Feast Day of Our Lady of Lourdes. I want to get back to what I was talking about earlier, this really interesting article by Kevin Orland Johnson on the 10 most common misconceptions about apparitions, which he published some years ago for Catholic Answers. And the third thing that he says, the third big misconception that people have about apparitions, is that people claim to see apparitions just to get into the spotlight. That is sadly true. That is sadly the case. Not in all cases, though. Obviously, if it's a legit apparition, usually the seer, whoever that is, that's the last thing they want, is any kind of public recognition. They don't want that. But we have to admit that there are a lot of reports of apparitions out there. Very few of them, very, very few of them are actually legitimate. Overwhelmingly, the two greatest sources of these apparition reports are human fraud and human delusion. In other words, someone's lying about this. They're making it up for attention or for whatever reason. And then also some people are genuinely deluded. And if they're deluded, it's quite possible that the enemy has something to do with it as well. Because remember what St. Paul says in 2 Corinthians chapter 11, verse 14, when he says that Satan himself masquerades as an angel of light. The scriptures talk about counterfeit miracles that could potentially even deceive the elect, deceive true believers. So because even something seems miraculous doesn't necessarily mean it's from God. And let's face it, the devil even tried to deceive Jesus. Remember, he offered to, you know, hey, he actually tried to get Jesus to do a miracle on demand for himself. Why don't you turn these rocks into bread? If he's going to try to trick our Lord, he's certainly going to try to trick us. And so these counterfeit miracles, these counterfeit ways in which he craftily wants to get people off course, that's something we should be aware of. And some of these false apparitions, they may have something to do with the diabolical. We can't rule that out. But the least frequent apparition claims, those are the ones that are actually true. A direct outreach from God, or perhaps through a saint, perhaps through Mary, an intermediary, an angel. Most of the people who get the real ones, they don't want them. They're not looking for them. And later on, they probably wish that this never happened in a certain sense, because it brings this unwanted attention. And they're usually very modest in their conduct, in the way they carry themselves. False apparitions, usually those who promote them, they're pretty deluded. They're into publicity. And this is what we see time and time again. So if you, and he talks about this, Kevin Johnson talks about this, when you see self-proclaimed visionaries giving interviews to the press, telling you, oh yeah, I've got this message that can save the world. If you see somebody blessing people, if you see someone receiving pilgrims, oh, come and see me, I'm the visionary, that's a sign that this is not legitimate. This is probably fraudulent. Maybe we can be charitable and say they're delusional, but this is probably not real. It's almost 100% likely that it's not real. So St. John of the Cross, he's a good model in this regard. And St. John of the Cross was once told sometime in his career that there was a woman who the Holy Spirit was allegedly speaking to directly, appearing to in some way. And so he went to check this out, and he walked up to her and said, "Are you the lady to whom the Holy Spirit is appearing?" And she said, "Yes, I am." He said, "Okay, have a nice day." And then he went and told the bishop immediately that this woman was either A, a fraud, or B, delusional. And so, anyways, another thing too is, this is the fourth thing that Kevin Johnson says with respect to these sort of misconceptions that people have about apparitions. One of the misconceptions is you can tell if an apparition is real if miraculous things happen around it. Now, again, I just sort of talked about this a little bit with this idea of counterfeit miracles, but miracles are strictly speaking a separate category from apparitions. Sometimes the miraculous does accompany a legit apparition. For example, at Fatima, there's a miracle of the sun. At Lourdes, there are, of course, all the various healing miracles. We've got the Tilma of Guadalupe, but not necessarily. Some apparitions don't have any miraculous, what we would say miraculous activity, might be surrounding them. Another misconception that people have is that you yourself, this is number five on his list, you yourself will one day see an apparition. And he says, this is not likely, this side of Armageddon. You can't compel God to give you an apparition. He doesn't owe it to you. You haven't earned it. You don't deserve it. Pride, remember, is the worst sin that you can possibly get into. It's an extremely terrible vice to think about it this way, that you don't owe, you know, God doesn't owe you this. And St. Teresa of Avila said, and I quote, "I consider it certain that spiritual people who think that they deserve delights of spirit for the many years that they have practiced prayer, they will not ascend to the summit of the spiritual life," end of quote. So if you think, you know, I've been praying for so long, I've been so faithful in my prayer, I'm such a prayer warrior, I deserve some sort of a special supernatural grace, she says you're not going to get to the top of the spiritual mountain. It's not going to happen. Well, think about what Jesus said in Matthew chapter 12, verse 39. Oh, teacher, you know, they're like, give us a sign. Give us some sort of proof that you're legit. What did Jesus say? An evil and adulterous generation asks for a sign. If we're asking for signs, if we're asking for special revelations because we think we're special, that's a bad sign in and of itself. Think about what he said also, Jesus in Matthew chapter 23, verse 12. Whoever exalts himself will be humbled, but whoever humbles himself will be exalted. Why do you want this? Why do you want a special revelation that nobody else has? Is it so that you can exalt yourself? What's your motivation here? Something to think about. So St. John of the Cross, he said, sometimes people have this taste for these out-of-the-box, you know, unique spiritual experiences. And he called it having a spiritual sweet tooth, a spiritual sweet tooth. You know, these fuzzy feelings or whatever, these special revelations. And he says, really, it's a matter of spiritual greed, and it can make somebody an enemy of Christ. The best advice is stick to the sacraments. Stick to an orderly, disciplined spiritual life. Prayer, receiving the sacraments, reading scripture. Remember what St. Teresa of Lisieux said, and she was obviously one of the greatest saints in the history of the church. She said, I prefer the monotony of sacrifice to spiritual ecstasy. Can you honestly say that you can say the same thing as her? I prefer the monotony of sacrifice to spiritual ecstasy. So that's what the saints say. So in other words, we shouldn't necessarily be going looking for these things. God does grant them to certain individuals, but you can't make it happen. And if you do want to make it happen, that could be a bad sign. That could be a bad sign. Number six on the list of misconceptions about apparitions. People who don't bother with modern apparitions just aren't spiritually gifted enough to understand. You know, and there are a lot of alleged modern apparitions around. You've heard about them. I've heard about them. And if you're not really interested in them, there's a lot of people that we know in parishes that try to promote these things. And if you don't want to learn about this, well, then you're obviously not spiritually gifted enough to understand what's really going on. All right, we need to deal with this because we do meet people like this from time to time. Here's the deal: if you're not interested in an alleged apparition, especially if it hasn't been approved at any level by the church, guess what? You're not doing anything wrong, and you're actually on safe ground. Because even, think about this, even the approved apparitions of the church, even the approved apparitions of the church, you don't have to believe in any of them to be Catholic. Lourdes, even you don't have to believe in Lourdes if you don't want to. You don't have to believe that Our Lady appeared at Fatima. You don't have to believe that Guadalupe happened. And you can still hold the Catholic faith. Now, I think they did happen, those ones for sure. They're approved by the church. They're considered worthy of belief. I think there's great evidence that these things happen, just looking at the evidence. But it's not necessary to believe in these even approved apparitions for salvation. And there's a reason why God grants these private revelations. We'll talk about that when we come back from our break. But you don't have to believe in even the approved ones. So you certainly don't have to believe in any of the non-approved ones. You're not being unspiritual or you're not part of the inside crowd. Don't worry about that if somebody tries to make you feel guilty for that. All right? Sorry, I got a little worked up there. We'll be right back. I got to take a quick break here. It's the Cale Clark Show, 1-888-914-9149. Talk to you in a minute.
Follow Cale on Twitter, at Cale Clark. That's C-A-L-E Clark with an E.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
Helping you keep your mind off traffic and on the more important things in life. It's Cale Clark on Relevant Radio.
Hey, welcome back. We've got a lot of people on hold here. We're talking about Our Lady of Lourdes, Lourdes and miracles. And there are Lourdes of miracles, loads of miracles in the Catholic Church to this day. 1-888-914-9149. But before we get to the phones, and I got to finish up this top 10 list of misconceptions that people have about apparitions in the Catholic Church. I do want to remind you that next week, Lent is starting. Don't forget, next Wednesday is Ash Wednesday, and we want to help you on your Lenten journey with Father Rocky's Lenten Lessons on the Mass. You've got to go to relevantradio.com or the Relevant Radio app, and you can just simply click on the banner and sign up for this, and you'll get an email every day where Father's going to walk you through the different parts of the Mass. It's going to be great. He's going to really do the Mass in slow motion for us, break it down for us. And there's going to be a bonus this year, a bonus video to accompany every lesson. And Father Rocky's going to give you kind of a behind-the-scenes look, a little bit more detail at all these various sections of the Mass. I can't wait, and I hope you can't either. It's going to be great. Father Rocky never disappoints. So go to relevantradio.com or through the app. You can sign up for Lenten Lessons with Father Rocky. Now, just back to this list of misconceptions that people have about apparitions. We were talking just before the break about the difference between private revelations, which these apparitions all fall into this category, and public revelation. Now, all you have to believe, all you're required to believe as a Catholic is public revelation. And in the letter of Jude in the New Testament, and Jude is a pretty short letter, it only has verses, there's no chapters. In verse 3 of the letter of Jude, Jude writes this. He said, "Beloved, being very eager to write to you of our common salvation, I found it necessary to write appealing to you to contend for the faith which was once for all delivered to the saints." That's Jude verse 3. And he's obviously writing in the context of these false teachers that have slipped into the church. And he says, listen, stick to the faith that was delivered once for all to the saints. This is what's called the deposit of faith. This is public revelation. Jesus says that this revelation was to be given to all the nations. That's what the word Catholic means. It means universal. The Catholic faith is not an esoteric, secret, mystery religion where only the initiated, only the true insiders get to find out what the truth is, and everybody else doesn't have the full picture. No, the Catholic faith is public. What we believe is public. It's part of the public record. We believe these things happened in public. It wasn't done in a corner, as the Acts of the Apostles says. When Jesus died, he died publicly on the cross, and he resurrected. He appeared to certain people, and they publicly preached about this. So our doctrine is public. Anybody can look it up. Anybody can read the catechism. Anybody can know about it. There's not a secret group who has the real inside poop on this, okay? This is all public. And this is what our religion is all about. But here's the thing. Since the death of the last apostle, public revelation is now over. So this is the deposit of faith. So it's almost like a big cabbage that you're peeling back the layers, and we're looking deeper and deeper into this deposit, or it's like somebody depositing their money in a bank, as an early church father said, and we're just kind of withdrawing truths from this bank account constantly throughout the centuries, but it's still the one deposit. Nothing has been added to it, and nothing's been taken away either. So these apparitions are private revelations, and this really happens because God wants to remind us about some part of public revelation. And I don't know, he has different reasons for doing this. Perhaps he wants, it's to do with certain problems in the world today. I don't know. But you don't have to believe any of the private revelations. That doesn't mean that they're not from God. Some of them have been approved, some of them haven't been. But you only have to believe the public teaching of the church. Just want to run through the last couple things on the top 10 list really quickly, and then we'll take a couple more calls here. Number 7, another misconception. Bishops encourage crowds to flock to any reported apparition. No, that's simply not the case. In fact, they probably live in dread of getting that phone call. Somebody says there's an apparition in your diocese, because then they have to investigate it. And obviously, if it's real, they want people to go to it, but many of them are not. So if it is legit, they will get people to go to it. So they don't discourage people. That's number eight. Number nine, this is important. If enough people go to see an apparition, the bishop will give it his blessing eventually. That is not true. That's another misconception. As Benedict XVI, our beloved Pope Emeritus, always used to say, truth is not determined by majority vote. If you get enough people to say this is real, that doesn't make it real. That doesn't make it real. And it's not the wisdom of the crowd that decides whether an apparition is genuine or not. It's the official, you know, the right authority for deciding that, which is the local bishops, the magisterium of the church. And sometimes the Vatican has to get involved. So that's number nine. And number 10, this is the last one. Apparitions can be photographed. No, that's not, they can't be. That is another huge misconception about apparitions. We're going to go to the phones right now. Sheila is calling from Toronto. Sheila, welcome to the show. How are you?
Hi, Cale. I'm great. How are you?
I'm very good, thank you. Thanks for calling in.
Yeah, I just wanted to share my experience at Lourdes. So my family and I went to Lourdes in November of 2019.
Uh-huh.
And 7 months earlier, I had a miscarriage on Good Friday of 2019.
Oh, my goodness.
So we went there. Yeah, I was actually there for my daughter, who had a cyst in her neck. But I also went there. We went to the waters for healing and, you know, for, I guess, closure, grieving for the baby we lost.
Yeah.
And I had actually seen a doctor who said the chances of having another baby were not good.
Mm-hmm.
But likely, if I did get pregnant, I would... I might lose the baby. There's a 50% chance of losing the baby. So I didn't have much hope that we could. But, you know, I went there with hope in my heart that, you know, even if we don't have another one, I would still feel loved by God. Mm. But, yeah, so we went there. And, you know, the waters, the bath at Lourdes was really powerful experience for me.
Mm.
Came back, and 6 weeks later, went to the doctor and found out I was pregnant.
Wow.
So I guess
that
just never
amazing.
Underestimate God's plan for you. Yeah. So I just wanted to share that with people to give them some hope.
That's incredible. That's an incredible story, Sheila. Wow, and that's amazing. And you're probably holding your baby right now, right?
I am, and I'm happy he's not crying.
Yeah, that's amazing. That would make for bad radio. But let me ask you this, Sheila. When you had the miscarriage, did you, before you went to Lourdes, were you questioning God's love for you at the time?
I was questioning what his plan was, because it was my second miscarriage. So I was just wondering, questioning, like the why me, you know, kind of pity party, kind of wondering what the plan is. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And obviously that was, as you said, a really powerful experience to be in those waters. And wow. And it's amazing. And it looks like you got your healing for sure. And the fact that you were able to have that baby, that's amazing. And what about your daughter? You mentioned that she had a cyst in her neck, and that's why you originally went there.
So when we came back, she had surgery, and so far the cyst hasn't come back. Praise God. So
thank God for that.
Just keep praying. Yeah, we just keep praying. But
Yeah,
thank you for your show. It's been really uplifting.
Oh, well, thank you for calling, Sheila. Thank you for listening and the encouragement. I really appreciate that. And I think your call really encouraged a lot of listeners out there. Absolutely. So that was Sheila calling from Toronto, talking about her experience at Lourdes. She originally went there with her family because of a cyst that was in her daughter's neck. And she had also suffered a miscarriage, her second miscarriage, and after bathing in the waters of Lourdes, was able to once again become pregnant. And her daughter was also healed through surgery. And that's an important thing that we have to remember, too, that not all healings are done in a sort of out-of-the-box, an extraordinary way. Sometimes God works through the normal means of healing, through doctors. Remember Dr. Luke, right, in the Gospel of Luke. He was, in fact, a physician. And he's incredibly blown away by Jesus' miraculous healings. He's like, man, I wish I could do that. But we have to remember that God heals in the ordinary ways too, and he works through medicine, he works through doctors. So a lot of people, they're only looking for miraculous healings, and they won't even see doctors when they're sick. Don't do that. Please go to the doctor and keep praying, but do what you can from a human point of view. And that's it. That's all I have to say. I'm not a doctor. I don't play one on TV, but or even on the radio, but I am here for you. It's the Cale Clark Show. I really want to thank you for listening today. I want to thank Lucas Holt for producing, Karen Moran for working social media, and she broke her rule. She watched The Song of Bernadette in black and white, and she said it's a great film. So, hey, maybe on this day you can go find that, watch it tonight with your family. And, of course, Patrick Alog worked the phones. Thank you so much, Patrick. Really appreciate that. And don't forget, you can, if you miss the show or if you miss part of the show, you can always go to relevantradio.com. You can always go to the Relevant Radio app, and you can stream the podcast. You can download them. You can also go to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts. We're everywhere. And you can get your fill of the Cale Clark Show and share it with a friend. Dr. Stacy Trisankos is going to be sitting in for Timory up next, so stay tuned for her. Take it away, Michaela.
Thank you for listening to my daddy.